Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 129 for January 27th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
It's as simple as this. It's a very old bottle of Beaumont.
That's Glenn Moore of Morrison Beaumont. And as I promised a couple of episodes ago, Glenn will give us Beaumont's side of the Mutter Beaumont saga. You may recall that's the bottle said to be from 1851 that was auctioned at McTeers in Glasgow for more than $50,000, despite questions about its age from historians. We'll hear more from Glenn later. First, let's look at the news. Inverhouse is releasing a new expression of Annock. It's single malt distilled at the Knockando Distillery. While many markets, other than the U.S., get the 10-year-old, only a few will get the new 16-year-old version of Annock. While the complete list of markets is still being worked out, Inverhouse confirms it will be available in Japan, Russia, and most of mainland Europe. U.S. whiskey lovers may not be familiar with Annock since it's not sold in the States, but it is available in some Canadian provinces, and there are ongoing negotiations between Inverhouse and a U.S. importer. Whiskey Magazine has handed out its first Icons of Whiskey Awards in India. If you're traveling on business or pleasure to India, head for Mumbai to visit the winners for Best Whiskey Restaurant, the Zodiac Grill, and Best Whiskey Bar, the Bombay High in the ITC Grand Maratha Hotel. But even though the Grand Maratha has the best whiskey bar, it didn't win honors as the best whiskey hotel. That went to the ITC Grand Maurya in New Delhi. That just happens to be where the Icons of Whiskey ceremony was held. By the way, India's Whiskey Icon of the Year award went to Vijay Mallya of United Spirits and White & Mackay fame. The winners will go on to compete for worldwide honors when Whiskey Magazine announces its Icons of Whiskey Awards next month on the eve of Whiskey Live London. India is just one of the markets where American spirits exports are growing. The Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S. released its 2007 statistics for sales and exports this week. Whiskey and other spirits exports from the U.S. grew 15% over 2006. In the U.S., whiskey sales grew 3.8%, including Scotch, Canadian, Irish, and American whiskeys, and made up 29% of all spirits sales. By the way, the market share for spirits and wine grew again in 2007, while beer's market share fell for the sixth straight year. If you're a fan of Japanese whiskeys, fellow malt maniac Ulf Buxrud has a new book coming out soon that you'll want to read. Japanese Whiskey, Facts, Figures, and Taste is a complete history of every distillery in Japan, including the stills that are now silent. It also has a tourist guide and plenty of tasting notes. There's a link to Ulf's website for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. Now for another note from the WhiskeyCast crime blotter. Police in Inverness, Scotland are trying to solve the case of the headless hoochman. Here's what happened. You're probably familiar with the Johnny Walker Striding Man character. The Castle Tavern in Inverness had a life-size Striding Man mannequin at the front door until it was stolen last week. The mannequin was found in a nearby parking lot minus its head. Castle Tavern owner George McLean told the BBC he'll give a case of Johnny Walker as a reward for information leading to the return of the head. Yes, there's a price on Johnny Walker's head. And that's the case of the headless hoochman. Getting serious again, I'm always glad to field your questions about whiskey, and I've received a few over the last couple of weeks that I've been able to get some answers to. Bill Myers in St. Louis, Missouri, asked me to run down a rumor. He'd heard that the Scotch Whiskey Association is considering enacting rules to require all bottles of single malt scotch to list the distillery of origin, and wondered whether this would apply to the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. If you're familiar with the Society's bottlings, they identify distilleries by number and not by name. In fact, some distilleries insist that independent bottlers not use the distillery name on bottlings that aren't so-called distillery official bottlings. Keep in mind, the SWA can't make this kind of rule on its own, but the association's David Williamson says talks are underway on new legislation that would ensure that distillery names don't get slapped on other whiskeys.
The UK government is currently consulting on draft Scotch whisky regulations, and that consultation will run until the end of March this year. And these are very important regulations for the industry, and will put in place new legislation that will have a robust, comprehensive legal framework for Scotch whisky, improving its protection from unfair competition, and ensuring consumers around the world receive clear, consistent and accurate product information. The regulations that have been brought forward have been discussed in detail with the industry over the last 3 years. And it's a package of proposals that should put in place the highest levels of legal protection for Scotch whisky and ensure that the consumer gets accurate and clear information at all times.
And to answer our listener's question, how does this affect the use of distillery names on bottles?
One of the key provisions here is to ensure that the consumer is not misled. And so the legislation, if passed, will prohibit the use of distillery names on any single malt Scotch whisky unless the whisky was actually distilled there. It will also prevent single malt Scotch whisky being labelled in any other way which suggests it has been distilled at a distillery other than the true distillery. And that's just part of the package. One of the other areas that the industry has been looking for better protection is, for example, the use of traditional regional names, so Highland, Lowland, Speyside, Campbelltown and Islay. In taking action around the world to protect Scotch whisky, we've encountered products in overseas markets that have used those terms to try and misleadingly suggest to the consumer that it is Scotch whisky. So, for example, we've had to take action against Lowlands whisky in Spain and Highlands whisky in Holland. And Holland's famous for many things, but its Highlands and its whisky are not what Holland's famous for. And obviously, the term Highland was being used in that circumstance to suggest to the local consumer that this was a Scotch whisky. And by putting in protection the right sort of rules for regional names as well, that helps to add to the protection the category has.
Can you give me an example of where a distillery name was used on a whisky that wasn't distilled there that actually was a single malt Scotch?
Well, I think it's important to look at this whole package in the round about different the way it's going to protect Scotch whisky. I'm not going to pick out particular examples at this stage. What I think is important is that the industry has had very detailed discussions with the UK government over a number of years, and it's industry-led. These are proposals that the industry has discussed with the SWA, discussed with government, about how to put in place that protection for the category and put in protection for the consumer. Now, one of the key proposals here is making sure that on every bottle of Scotch whisky, it's quite clear what the category of Scotch whisky is. So there will be 5 category descriptions that will be used, either single malt, blended malt, single grain or blended grain, or blended Scotch whisky. And it will be compulsory on every bottle of Scotch whisky sold that one of the compulsory sales descriptions is used. Now, that will help to ensure the consumer gets consistent information about what they're buying, and its repeated appearance on labels. All of these different category descriptions will help to improve and build understanding of Scotch whisky worldwide. So it's an exciting time for Scotch whisky at the moment. We're seeing growth in our international markets, and here's an opportunity to put in place the best protection possible, but also to ensure that the consumer's getting the right sort of information.
Now, you know I have to ask the question again, has this ever actually happened in the past?
Absolutely. We've encountered the Scotch Whisky Association takes legal action around the world, and we can be taking up to 70 legal cases at any one time. Now, without going into the specifics of particular cases, I think what has been seen is that we have encountered problems in overseas markets where people have tried to take advantage of Scotch whisky's reputation, a reputation that's been built up over many years and which is important to protect. And I think we very much welcome what the UK government is seeking to do with these regulations. We hope that the regulations will be passed. And with the consultation that's currently ongoing, there's an opportunity for everyone to feed into that consultation, to make their views known, and then later in March when that finishes, hopefully by that time we'll have an agreement on the way forward and that this legislation can enter onto the statute book here in the UK at the earliest opportunity after that.
So this is more of an anti-counterfeiting move than just a one distillery accidentally claiming somebody else's name.
This is a broad package of proposals, Mark, that looks at the whole area of the definition and presentation of Scotch whisky. It looks at the category names, it looks at regional names, it looks at the presentation of the product to the consumer. So it's a wide-ranging package, and certainly we see it, the SWA, as being a defining milestone for the industry, putting in place the highest forms of legal protection, making sure the consumer gets that clear, consistent, and accurate information.
As for the Scotch Malt Whisky Society, the legislation would apply, but since it doesn't list distillery names on its modelings, there doesn't appear to be an issue there. Bill, hope that answers the question. Nelson Pidgeon of Massachusetts heard about WhiskeyCast from my recent appearance on the Mind of Men podcast. He's a newcomer to whiskey and asked about past episodes or other podcasts that would help a beginner learn more. Well, there's something in most WhiskeyCast episodes that a newcomer could learn from, but to be honest, it's a subject I really haven't tackled that much. There are two other podcasts that I can recommend for newcomers. I mentioned Anok earlier, and there's a podcast series at the Anok website that's ideal for beginners. There's also the ScotchCast, where the hosts give you a chance to listen as they go through a tasting session with two different malts each month. You can get a bottle as well, and it's a good way to nose and taste a whiskey and see if you can pick up the same things they do. There are links to both at the WhiskeyCast website. One question I get asked every so often is why the rest of the world sells whiskey in 700 milliliter bottles, while the U.S. standard is 750 milliliters. It's one of the reasons many whiskeys aren't sold in North America, and Kevin Erskine of the Scotch blog tracked down the reason for the difference and wrote it up in his blog.
Prior to us switching over to the metric system, which unfortunately the only place the United States did switch over to the metric system was in alcoholic beverages, we used to have things, and you remember people talking about a fifth.
Right.
And so when they decided to move to metrics, the closest similarity to a fifth was 750 milliliters. It wasn't exact. So even though the standard bottling in other countries was 700 milliliters, the agency who was tasked with this thought that they were protecting consumers by making sure that the alcohol companies didn't, continue to keep prices at the same level but only give us 700 milliliters. And, when you think about it, if I hand a 700 milliliter bottle to you and a 750 milliliter bottle to you, most people can't tell the difference unless it's exactly the same bottle. And even then they have a problem. And the difference between those two bottles is an airplane bottle. 50 milliliters is an airplane bottle. So as a result of the government's intention to protect consumers, we kind of got screwed around the world because it's pretty expensive when you're doing a majority of your bottling in 700 mil to rebottle just for a single market. So unless you're a big company or you've got a real desire to be in the U.S., we're missing out on a lot of bottlings that otherwise we could get and enjoy.
By the way, it does work both ways. Whiskey distillers in the U.S. have to change their bottling lines and produce new labels for the bottles they export to Europe. In fact, some distillers even adjust the alcohol content of their whiskeys to go along with European standards. Now, if you have a question you'd like to ask, email me. The address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And if I can't answer your question, I'll try to find someone who can. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold a spirit school class on American whiskeys and bourbons on February 5th. Interwhiskey Hamburg is the weekend of February 15th in Hamburg, Germany. That same weekend is Whiskey Live in Auckland, New Zealand, and the International Malt Whiskey Festival in Ghent, Belgium. The Edinburgh Whiskey Festival is February 22nd. Milroy's of Soho in London will host Julian and Preston Van Winkle for a bourbon tasting on February 27th. Whiskey Live London starts February 29th and goes through March 1st. The Astor Center in New York City will hold a Scotch tasting class with F. Paul Picoult on March 3rd. And Maker's Mark has announced the dates for its annual Thoroughbreds and Redheads weekend. April 11th is the running of the Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland in Lexington. And after that night's party in downtown Lexington, the activities move to the distillery in Loretto on Saturday, April 12th. That's the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay at Laphroaig.com. The debate is still raging over the authenticity of a bottle of Beaumont single malt auctioned at McTeers of Glasgow in December. The bottle was described as being presented in 1851 to a member of the family that owned Beaumont at the time, the Mooters, hence the term the Mooter Beaumont. The bottle was sold to an unidentified Russian collector who outbid Beaumont's current owners. But even before the auction started, historians started raising questions about whether the bottle could actually have been from 1851 and whether McTeers was accurate in describing it as the oldest bottle of whiskey in existence. In episode 126, veteran whiskey writer Dave Broom argued the case for the critics. In episode 127, we heard the rebuttal from Martin Green, who handled the auction for McTeers and stands by his description based on carbon dating done after the auction and paid for by Morrison Beaumont. In both episodes, I said that I would give Morrison Beaumont a chance to state its case, since it did bless the bottle as legitimate and tried to buy the bottle itself at the auction. Glenn Moore of Beaumont and I played phone and email tag for a couple of weeks, but we finally talked this week. Basically, what I'd like to get is the Morrison Beaumont side of the story on this 1850, the Mooter Beaumont. What's your side of this one, basically?
Yeah, well, this bottle came up for auction a couple of months ago. The provenance of it seemed fairly robust from a member of the Mooter family. McTeers, the auction house, put a date off it of circa 1850, which seems to be about right. We actually managed to get a sample from the whiskey, because I'm not sure if you're aware, the actual cork actually fell into the bottle. Because it was such an old bottle, the cork had dried up and fallen into the bottle. So we got a sample with the permission of the owner and McTeers auction house, and we got that carbon dated, and the carbon dating agreed that it was around that date. The challenge we have with anything like that is being exact as to exactly what year it was is very difficult, because in 1850 or thereabouts they didn't put lot numbers etc. on bottles. So we're fairly robust that it is a very old bottle of Beaumont. Whether it's exactly 1850, and I think that's why McTeers put the date of circa 1850, which give or take a certain amount of years.
But given that the provenance and the auction documents stated that this was presented to a member of the family in 1851, can you still stand by that, given that no one's really quite sure exactly how old this whiskey is when it was billed in the auction documents as being presented to a family member in 1851?
I think what McTeers have done is taken the provenance from the actual owner, and that was his understanding or recollection of it. I think all they can do is state what the recollection was from the current owner. All I can say is we are fairly adamant that there is an old bottle of whiskey. Exact date we're not sure about. The person that bought it seems very happy of its provenance. McTeer seemed robust about its provenance, as does the seller of it. As I say, we'll never get the exact date, but it's certainly an old bottle of Beaumont.
Let me ask you a question that has been posed to me in several comments from emails I've received over the last few weeks. And this is one you're probably not going to like, but I've got to ask it.
Yep.
It's since the Russian collector that bought this has not come forward, and the bottle is apparently still on display at Beaumont, correct?
It's not on display. What we offered the buyer of it was to try and reseal the bottle, recork it, because the actual cork had fallen out. So we actually have custody of it, if you like. It's in our safe, in our whiskey laboratory, awaiting repair, which we're just about to undertake.
Okay, let me continue with this.
Yeah.
The skeptics out there have said, have told me, or that believe that this is, to put it mildly, a, for lack of a better term, a PR move by your Bowmore's PR agency or the distillery itself that sort of got a little out of hand, and that, in fact, Bowmore bought the bottle and this was cooked up. Can you refute this once and for all?
Absolutely can refute it. I personally, on behalf of the company, actually bid for the bottle and was outbid by, unfortunately, by the Russian collector. We have actually done very little PR on this at all. The fact the debate has arisen from sources out with ourselves, as you're probably aware of, people commenting on it. There's been a lot of blogs on the internet. You may be aware that we have made very little comment apart from what I've told you is we think the provenance is fairly robust. The exact date we will never know. The buyer's happy, the seller's happy. As far as a PR exercise, I actually don't think that Bowmore needs to do that kind of PR exercise. We've got a very good reputation, both within the industry and within collectors and consumers alike. And I think the fact that a bottle of Bowmore reaches £30,000 at auction kind of verifies the quality and the esteem in which it's held.
And you expect after the resealing process is complete to transfer this back to the collector who bought it?
Absolutely. We have asked whether he would allow us to display it at the distillery, and that's basically discussions that we're having at the moment. But it's his bottle, he bought it. We are happy to try and reseal it for him to keep the product intact as much as we can do.
Have you spoken with him personally?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add? Because I know that you guys have taken a bit of a beating on the internet on this, and I want to make sure you have every chance to defend yourself.
Yeah, it's as simple as this. It's a very old bottle of Bowmore. The debate, I think, could go on and on as to the exact date of it being bottled, whether it was 1870, whether it was 1860, whether it was 1850. I don't think we'll ever get to the bottom of that. Unfortunately, there's nobody alive that would be able to tell us when it was exactly bottled. We certainly know that that kind of packaging was used for the Mutter Bowmore. The provenance of it was from a member of the Mutter family. So I think we've done as much as we can do. I think we have to bear in mind we were not the seller of it. We were not the auctioneer house. We were not the owner of the distillery at the time, and we're not the buyer of it. I think we've done all we can do to verify its provenance. I think McTeers have done all they can do. I'm delighted if people want to carry on the debate, but there's very little more we can add to that.
Have you learned anything that will help you the next time this happens, or if another vintage bottle of Bowmore comes across the auction block?
I'm not sure there's a lot to be learned. What we have is an old bottle. The provenance of it is the history that the owner is aware of. I think old bottles come up very rarely of this kind of description. I think with any antiquities, there is almost always a question around the exact dating of it. And I think the fact that we got it carbon dated is as much at the moment that we can really do to verify it. But I would reiterate the fact that we were not the buyer, nor the seller, nor the auction house. So we've actually done an awful lot more and offered the buyer to reseal it for them than we needed to do. But I'm just delighted that people are still interested in Bowmore and collectors of old Bowmore. I doubt whether another one like this will ever come at auction, because this was the first time we had seen a bottle from the Mutter area in that kind of packaging. So if another one does come, I think it'll be very rare that we would see that.
And with that, I'm going to let this debate rest for now. However, I'd still love to talk with that mysterious Russian collector. And since I know there are WhiskeyCast listeners in Russia, if you're the one who bought that bottle, you know where to contact me. The email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. That's all for this episode of WhiskeyCast. You'll find links for this episode, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.